You ready?
I am ready.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
Howdy, folks, and Happy New Year.
Well, it's good to be back. We've been on a break for a little while, so it's good to talk to you again, Brian.
It's good to talk to you as well, Paul.
You'd think we'd have, you know, just a whole plethora of things to talk about, but there's not really much going on in the world of comics right now.
Yeah, it's we're kind of in a dead spot. I feel like we've been in a dead spot a few times. News either hits hard or just
not
takes
at all.
A break.
Yeah. Okay. Today on the program, we'll be discussing Heir to the Empire, the 1996 Dark Horse adaptation of Timothy Zahn's novel. But first, before we begin, I want to plug a previous episode real quick. Two episodes ago, we did Phonogram, and it went up on Christmas Day. And because of that, I didn't advertise it as much as I should have because it was Christmas. But I don't think it got the attention it deserved because I really enjoyed that episode. And it's a great comic. So if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to that one. It's very good. Plug over.
Nice plug.
Nice.
Well done, young man.
So as I said, not much is happening in the world of comics. I will mention that we do know about the Stan Lee accusations that are going on right now, but I don't really want to discuss that because I don't think we're that kind of a show, if you know what I mean. But we don't exist in a vacuum, and I know that's going on right now.
I think that neither of us probably would have... Our contribution is not required. And, you know, the idea of letting this play out without, you know, a couple of dudes on a podcast weighing in when no one has asked us to is probably the best option we could take.
Right. Craig Ferguson has three major rules, which are, does it need to be said? Does it need to be said right now? Does it need to be said by me? And so I think that fits in. I don't think we need to weigh in on this at all.
Right.
Okay. But one thing that's going on that is kind of fun is the announcement that Conan, the Barbarian, not the O'Brien, is returning to Marvel.
Although it would be great to see Conan O'Brien.
Yes, I would love that, actually.
Yes.
I would like to see Conan O'Brien have an ongoing monthly series.
In a loincloth.
That would be great. So the idea of anything returning to Marvel right now is news in and of itself. But Marvel was the home of Conan from the early 70s to, what, the early 90s, was it, Brian?
I think that sounds right. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was a good long run, although I think a monthly Conan comic had sort of disappeared by that point, which is, I think the property lapsed a little bit at Marvel, which may have allowed Dark Horse to step in and make a better pitch.
I love the old Roy Thomas, John Buscema, series from back in the day, and I don't know if you've ever seen any of the savage sort of Conan, the black and white series. That was
sort of the magazine style, the Rolling Stone, the more tablet-y
right
style, comics as well,
and it was more adult oriented,
right?
And that was, if just artwork wise that was beautiful.
It was kind of exciting too as a young man, because I kept waiting for the costumes to have malfunctions.
In the Red Sonja department?
Yes, and they never did.
Yeah. Red Sonja, by the way, one of the more impractical outfits for a warrior to wear. I don't think we were complaining about it back then.
Not then. I think our knowledge of biology and anatomy was probably not as high as it is now.
So, yeah, I mean, it can be an exciting prospect if Marvel does something similar, maybe not the adult-oriented, but maybe the old ongoing, the Roy Thomas ongoing, if they try to emulate that, it might be something interesting.
And Fanboy Nation has already anointed Jason Aaron as the heir to the Conan throne. There's no evidence or any kind of news that in any way, shape, or form suggests that Jason Aaron is going to be writing Conan. But
it would make sense. I mean, he brought back Star Wars, another property stolen acquired from Dark Horse.
Yes. Poor Dark Horse.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, to me, it's part of that is I like Dark Horse. I don't get a lot of Dark Horse, like, monthlies, But losing Star Wars and Conan over a short period of time. Now, their manga is still like top notch for those who enjoy that kind of thing. And they do have some very interesting, you know, Jeff Lemire has the, is it the Black, what's the Jeff Lemire series that he's doing? But, you know, they do have some interesting creator-owned properties still going at Dark Horse. But, you know, Mike Mignola's
Hellboy BPRD and all that.
Yeah.
They still have Buffy and Angel.
Right.
You know, if you like that sort of thing, it's quite good.
Yes. So, yeah. But it is interesting to see, you know, many will talk about this as Marvel's gain, but for some of us who appreciate independent comics and independent publishers, it does feel a little bit like Dark Horse's loss. I don't know, the news is sort of, we don't, as of the recording of this, we don't know like a lot of the numbers involved. We don't know how the deal came about. Did Dark Horse lose Conan or did they just let it lapse? We don't know for certain, but it just feels for poor Dark Horse, you know, losing Star Wars, losing Conan, that two of their prime properties are now in the hands of the evil empire.
Well, that brings up the idea of Disney acquiring pretty much my entire childhood. Well, no, they have Marvel and all the things that go with that. They have Star Wars. Oh,
so Marvel is doing a Goonies series?
Okay. Probably controversial opinion here, but I'm not a big fan of Goonies at all. Do we have to end the podcast now?
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. When I was a kid, I loved Goonies. Goonies was great, you know, as a kid, you know, especially that end part where they're in those caves and, you know, in a pirate ship and like water slides and all kinds of crazy stuff. But a couple years ago, I rewatched it when it was kind of at the height of its resurgence. And gee whiz, it's very loud.
it doesn't exactly hold up.
It's not great, you know. And yes, this is heresy. So I'm with you, Paul.
I know. Yeah,
in terms of current reading of Goonies, loved it as a kid. Thought it was the best thing I had ever seen since Ice Pirates. And watching it as an adult human being who is still prone to enjoy kind of nutty stuff as a comic book fan, I didn't love it anymore. Well, so that's okay.
I was not a big fan at the time, and I haven't softened my opinion on it. I know it's terrible of me. I should, for someone of my age and generation, I should love that movie, but unfortunately I don't. So
why do we hate fun, Paul? Why do we hate fun?
Look, opinions are subjective. It's just because I don't like a thing doesn't make it bad. So Conan, I don't know how we got from Conan to Goonies. That's impressive. But I was going to say Disney
we are trading in nostalgia.
True. So I was wondering if this deal had something to do with film rights. There's no indication of that. I haven't read anything about that. But is it perhaps that getting the rights back to Conan, Disney now has the ability to make a Conan movie?
It seems likely. I think that's a good guess. And by the time this actually posts in a week or two, we could know more information. What I have read, though, is Red Sonja, as you mentioned earlier, is still, like, Dynamite currently still retains the rights to Red Sonja.
Oh, I just assumed that she would come over with Conan.
But Red Sonja was with Dynamite, so it was a Dynamite property or a license. It was a Dynamite property.
Red Sonja is Dynamite. You got it.
Yes, but Dynamite had the license to Red Sonja, and Dark Horse had the license to Conan.
Oh, see, I was unaware of that.
So these were even split, and I don't know the machinations. You know, we could do a whole podcast where we like actually spend 2 weeks like doing investigative reporting. Coming soon, the collected edition investigative reporters podcast. But so I don't know how all these rights work with between Dark Horse, Dynamite, Boom also does a lot of licensed properties.
Yeah.
You know, is G.I. Joe and Transformers, are G.I. Joe and Transformers coming over back to Marvel as well?
Oh, that'd be interesting because they're IDW right now.
They're IDW. So you've got Dynamite, IDW, Boom, Dark Horse, all companies that rely heavily on licensed properties. And the licensing seems all over the place, and maybe it makes more sense in legalese than it does to we as fans sitting on the outside going, can I just get all my comics from one place?
Wow.
I'm kidding about that. We don't want all our comics from one place.
much like we don't want all of our, it's a completely different subject, but Disney owning everything. While I think it's very interesting that they are buying Fox and you can have the Fantastic Four and X-Men back into the MCU, you know, there's part of me that says, wow, that's pretty interesting. I'd love to see that movie. At the same time, I don't think it's good for quality to have everybody owned by the same blanket organization.
Oh, sure, because then you have a limited pool of writers, artists, directors, actors, screenwriters, fill in the blank.
Yeah, well, then you're also getting directives from on high, and there's nothing you can do about it. But that's getting far afield. Anyway, I think it'll be interesting.
I think we're both intrigued by the fact that Conan is returning to Marvel, where it had, for some of us, its glory days with Roy Thomas writing. And while, like, I lapsed in terms of reading Conan when it was a Dark Horse, not as a slight against Dark Horse, but some of it was, I was getting older. And
well, I'll admit, I haven't read any of it from Dark Horse. In fact, you know, I don't think I've read a Conan comic that was post-1985.
Probably same here.
But, you know, if they can do with Conan what they did with Star Wars, I'm okay. Because the Star Wars series, the ongoing series anyway, is quite good.
And I don't know if I'll follow it because I'm not a big barbarian sword-wielding fan. That's just not my shtick. But depending on who's writing it or who's doing the art, I absolutely will give it a shot. I'll pick up a couple issues. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. I'll check it out when it finally does hit the shelves. I'll take a look at it. But I'm with you on, you know, the hyper male fantasy type of thing that Conan is. It wears thin after a while. Right when you're 8 to 12, but.
And if they can get a writer to make it more appealing to a more mature comic book audience, that's great. But if this is also a gateway for the diminishing younger readers, that's okay too. Although in the age of the internet, do we need Conan to appeal to the pre and pubescent male?
There's plenty of things that appeal to the prepubescent male.
Yes. So perhaps now there will be investment in creating him as a, or writing him or presenting him as a character that has a little more depth and.
Yeah. No. I mean, the fantasy aspect of the fantasy world that Conan lives in is interesting. There's a lot of material that can be worked with. So, we could, you know, if it goes in a different direction, that'd be great. I'd be okay. I'd be on board. So the other thing that was announced on a completely, you know, 180 flip of what we were just talking about was the fact that John Ridley, the author of 12 Years a Slave, has been commissioned to write the other history of the DC Universe. This will be a retelling of classic stories from the vantage point of marginalized or traditionally disenfranchised members of the DC family. So, Brian, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it's fascinating. And John Ridley, not just 12 Years a Slave, but he is a great writer of note outside of, you know, the screenwriting that he did. Mm-hmm. He also, he wrote for Wildstorm. I mean, he's written for DC before, and he wrote what I think was a great miniseries like several years ago called The American Way, which has now has a sequel currently being published by Vertigo, such as Vertigo is these days, which involved sort of the secret history of superheroes as well, although these were superheroes of his own creation and not DC's properties, and which may be a gateway into whatever it is that he is, this new project that he is going to be taking on.
So you think that DC saw what he was doing there and said, let's try to expand this?
Well, I think they liked what he was doing enough with the first American Way series that they gave him this sequel, the second American Way series, which is being done by Vertigo. And they must have liked what he was doing well enough, and it piqued interest, possibly with a proposition he gave them, that they have clearly decided to go forward with this.
Yeah, and I think it's an incredible idea when you take, again, specifics haven't really been announced on this yet, but you're going to see stories about, you know, John Stewart and Renee Montoya,
Vixen,
Katana, and others from and stories that we consider iconic, but seen from a completely different perspective.
Which is a great idea, and I realize this will make a certain segment of fanboys irritable.
You know what? Screw that
shit. But yeah, and I'm always happy when that segment of fanboys are irritable.
Yeah.
Because they're always irritable.
What it comes down to is the expansion of how stories are told. And if you tell a story for 40, 50 years from the perspective
of the same viewpoint.
Yeah. From the perspective of a white guy, it's boring.
Yes.
And just for pure entertainment, you know, we want to see more. And if we can get into the socio-political ideas behind these things, all the better.
I agree completely. You see people getting very upset when a character is not the, I want to say, Aryan ideal, and you may cut that. But if the point of view does not reflect their own world or their own worldview, they tend to get a little cranky.
Right. We're going to get into this on a different note. We're going to get into this in the story that we're talking about, you know, spoilers for The Last Jedi, but Luke, as he's portrayed in that new movie, is vastly different from what we'll see in what we're reading today.
Yes.
And people got really pissed off about that because they have these, you know, preconceived notions of what they think their characters should be and the storylines that they should follow. And again, that's just boring. It's so much better to be surprised and invigorated by something.
Well, and these are the same people who get, you know, all bunched up when there's like a female hero. God forbid.
Yeah, you know? And we're going to see that too in this this story, the other history of the DC universe.
There's too many women in Star Wars. Well, I don't know what world those people live in, but
yeah,
it's settle down, Beavis.
Yeah, I just it's so much better to have diversity. I know I'm a social justice warrior, whatever, but I'd rather see a much bigger variety of stories being told than just the same old thing over and over and over.
Exactly,
again.
Because it keeps it fresh. I mean, right. The whole point of comics like Watchmen and whatever iconic comics you have are those that take the expected and twist them around a little bit and change the perspective. It's a good thing. It's always a good thing. And I think John Ridley is a great choice for this project because he is a very good writer. He has interesting things to say. If you've ever seen interviews with him, he has interesting things to say and an interesting take on the world around him. And good on DC for doing this. I hope it works. I hope it works. I hope it is a good project.
I hope so too.
I hope people approach it for what it is rather than come in expecting to hate it because it doesn't match up with how they have expected comics to be.
And this further brings to mind the positive direction that DC is heading in as opposed to their biggest rival, where they are trying new things and they are trying to include more diversity. So I am really impressed with the way DC is handling itself over the last, 2 years?
Yes. Yay, Detective Comics comics.
Yay.
I love the fact that technically DC stands for Detective Comics, so it's DC Comics, it's Detective Comics comics.
That's true. But that's beside the point. Anyway, I'm very excited about this this particular project, and I'm always excited to see new and interesting angles being taken on traditional characters and traditional storylines.
And I hope it doesn't suck.
And I hope it doesn't suck. Okay. that's just my motto.
Then that just feeds the angry fanboy beast. So.
Yeah, so that's just going to be my motto for life in general. I hope it doesn't suck. So, Brian, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Star Wars and Heir to the Empire.
Sounds good, Paul.
You like cheap comic books, right? Well, I'm Professor Allen, and I talk about cheap comic books on the Quarterbin Podcast. In every episode, I'll dissect a single comic from my collection, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for the issue. Forget about $4 new comics that you can read in 4 minutes, or crossover events that can cost $100 to collect. Join me in the Quarterbin, where even bad comics are a bargain, and good ones are a steal. The Quarterbin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky Podcast Network. Visit us at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or search Relatively Geeky or Quarterbin Podcast in iTunes. I guarantee it'll be worth every penny.
And we're back. Heir to the Empire was originally released by Dark Horse Comics in 1996. Based on the novel by Timothy Zahn, it was scripted by Mike Baron with art by Oliver Fatine and Fred Blanchard. Now, the Star Wars extended universe is a vast and unwieldy thing. It consists of novels and short stories, comic books and video games, all written over the course of decades and conveys the history that encompasses literally thousands of years. So when Lucasfilm was bought by Disney and it came time to relaunch the series, it made sense to jettison some of that material and streamline things. And so the vast and complicated thing that was the extended universe became relegated to legends status. By making this material legends, it meant simply that these stories didn't go away. They just became more like mythology than canon. And it also meant that it could be incorporated back into the canon if the writers and architects could find a place for it. And one such reincorporation was the character of Thrawn. Thrawn is a mysterious and ruthless Imperial Grand Admiral that worked behind the scenes and was a favorite of the Emperor. A skilled tactician that studied his opponent down to the most minor details, even going so far as to learn their culture and art so as to destroy them utterly, not just beat them. He was created by Timothy Zahn in a series of novels that were later adapted by Dark Horse Comics, the first being Heir to the Empire. Heir to the Empire is a non-canonical legend story that takes place not long after the destruction of the second Death Star and in the early stages of the fledgling New Republic. Han and Leia have married and are expecting twins, while Luke, now a full-fledged Jedi, is starting to build a new Jedi Order, beginning with his sister Leia. But on the edges of the galaxy, Grand Admiral Thrawn and his remnant of the Imperial Fleet begin his plan to retake power and make the Empire great again. He employs force-dampening animals and recruits dark Jedi, as well as his unmatched tactical skills, to begin the war all over again and threatens to take down the New Republic before it has even begun. So, Brian, what did you think of your first look at Grand Admiral Thrawn?
Well, I like Thrawn. I see why he became a fan favorite. And this is only in the limited experience I have with him, because to be clear, I have not read the vast majority of particularly the Dark Horse world of Star Wars. I had kind of wandered away at that point. And even my Marvel reading of Star Wars probably consists of the first 30 or 40 issues of the Star Wars series published by Marvel, like after the original series. So this was an interesting journey back, I guess, I should say, to this world. And so there are a great many things that I may not, again, the extended universe, as you put it, I do not have a strong knowledge of. Yeah. But, yeah, that said, just coming at this series raw, this is the first time I read it, was on your recommendation. So just coming to this particular arc raw without a lot of, not baggage, baggage isn't the right word because baggage suggests a negative, which I don't mean, but without a lot of foreknowledge or post-knowledge, you know, I was looking for characters, like new characters in particular that I could identify with or kind of grab onto as characters that intrigue me. And Thrawn is vastly intriguing character, even in the limited experience I had with him in these few issues. So right from the get-go, just his sort of tactical techniques I found very fascinating.
Yeah, this is only the introduction. This is the first time we've ever seen this character.
Okay.
Later on, you know, he gets. You know, you get a little bit more deeper into his psychology, and it's touched on very briefly in the beginning of this series, where he uses the art of a culture to learn how a species thinks
and how to defeat them. Yeah,
how to defeat them, which I find fascinating. I mean, that's just a really great idea. It's very, you know, he has a very logical approach to things, very unemotional, logical way. Maybe he's an evil Vulcan. I don't know.
The crossover everybody has been waiting for.
Yes, that would be great. I'm not an expert by any stretch in the extended universe. I've read a handful of novels and a handful of comics from this era. And I don't, yeah, like I said, I don't want to say I'm an expert, but I find this fascinating. I keep saying fascinating. I find it very intriguing how this was done. You know, they continued the story from Return of the Jedi on, because I don't think Lucas had any, he didn't really care about telling the story after that. He was done. He went back to the prequels, of course, but I don't think he had any, he didn't care about continuing the story. So he handed it over to other people.
And do you know, and our vast amount of listeners can correct us or school us on this. Do you know, I feel as if Lucas would at least have had to have a say so in what was done and what wasn't done, even if it was just a passing yes or no, you can do this, you can't do this. Do you know?
It is my understanding that yes, he had a, there were several, you know, even the publishers had, you have to stay in a certain, you know, area. You can't go too far afield because there are several authors writing several different books at the same time, and everybody had to stay in a certain continuity. And I do believe at the time that Lucas did have a say so. He could say ixnay on something.
Okay.
But for the most part, Timothy Zahn had a lot of freedom. And that's something I really like about the Extended Universe, was the fact that a lot of writers at this time were given some leeway to add new characters, to play with the mythology, and to expand what Star Wars was. And Timothy Zahn in particular was given a lot of leeway to do things. Like, he created Zahn. Another character in this book is Mara Jade, who goes on to be, you know, really big character in the Extended Universe. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Right, yes. That's the woman who wants to kill Luke Skywalker.
Yes. Spoilers, Mara Jade eventually becomes Luke's wife. That's not canon anymore.
Right. This I did not know.
Yeah. Yeah. She is a Force user who ends up marrying Luke, and they have a kid together.
Well, it makes a little sense because, you know, there was clearly an attempt to create a spark between them, you know, hatred leading to love or what have you. So,
yeah, it's a very Sam and Diane thing going on.
Yeah. Wow.
Was that a good reference?
Wow. That might be a little topical for some, but...
No, cheers, man. Anyway, so this story basically takes the idea that, you know, the rebels have won, and they're trying to build their new republic and basically just do the exact same thing that allowed the emperor to rise in the first place, which is, you know, smart move, guys. But at the same time, they didn't just win outright and everybody gave up being the empire. There are still, you know, remnants of that empire and big ass ships and troops still out there that need to be subdued.
Sure. Well, it's like any revolution. It's like when, or any war, once you win the war, the people who had a stake in the losing side didn't just suddenly disappear.
Yeah. So we have the idea that Leia and Luke are traveling around trying to get, and Han for that matter too, trying to get people on board with the New Republic and trying to start a new world order.
With great power, Paul.
Exactly. But then Thrawn comes in to try to reestablish the old ways. And I find, you know, this is a great idea for an ongoing series.
Yes.
Also introduced in this are things like the Ysalamari. I'm probably pronouncing that word wrong.
But I was really hoping you were going to be the one to say that first.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of a slimy little creature that has the ability to dampen force abilities around them. And that's a way to stop. Because, you know, Luke has the biggest advantage of everyone being able to be a magical space wizard. So what's what he is?
So, but how did Darth Vader not know about these?
Because
he knew everything, right?
Yeah, you're not supposed to ask these questions, Brian.
Oh.
Well, there's also Dark Jedi out there.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is the Joris...
Kaboth.
Kaboth? I was going with Kaboth. Kaboth. The Dark Jedi that is introduced as a major big deal in the first few issues and then has completely and utterly disappeared by the last couple.
He does come back as the series goes on. But
okay.
Yes, but he is trying to put the Kaboth on the Jedi.
Oh.
Come on, this is good material, man.
Oh.
So, but that is another concept that I think current Star Wars is trying to pick up on, and that is the idea that there's good Jedi, dark Jedi, gray Jedi. So it's not all cut and dry. You know, that is an issue.
Do they all have different rings that are different colors?
Yes, and their biggest weakness is fear.
Yes,
because fear does lead to the dark side. You know,
fear does lead to the dark side.
Now, if there are people listening who can tell me the difference between a dark Jedi and a Sith. What's the difference?
Man, I don't know. why you're asking.
Yeah. But as far as the concept is concerned, you know, that is an issue that the Star Wars films have, which is there's all good and all bad, and there's really no in between. And when you take something like, you know, fear leads to the dark side and anger leads to the dark side, you kind of, you know, it's okay to get angry once in a while. Doesn't mean if you get angry, you suddenly become an evil warlord.
And what about avarice? Where does avarice lead?
I know. And sloth? Come on.
Sloth. Preversion.
Yes.
Lust.
Yeah. I mean, you know what, you know, the biggest thing that could lead you to the dark side is your hatred of sand. Ooh, that reference fell on deaf ears there.
It sure did.
It's from the prequels. Anakin hates sand.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. I have worked so hard to completely erase those from my memory.
Come on, but it's coarse and gritty and it gets everywhere.
That's true, and it gets in your land speeder.
Okay, band. I do like that idea that there are varying degrees of how you can use the Force. I think that, in fact, I know that if you ever watch the Rebels series, they talk about the different, you know, levels of being of a Force user. There's not just simply you're a Jedi or a Sith, and there's nothing in between. So, you know, you have different ways that you can use the Force. I really like that idea because it expands the universe. It expands the storytelling.
Well, and I think that's a good argument for this comic, which we should, you know, I should state, I really enjoyed this comic. I was confused a few times during it, but I really like this comic. And I think part of what makes the comics so good, like, because I'm reading the current comics that Marvel is producing, and I feel like a film is limited in terms of how much it can show and say.
Yes.
You've got two and a half hours or 5 hours, however. What was the last Star Wars film? 7 or 8 hours long? I couldn't.
Last Jedi?
Yes. It was morning when I went in, and it was late evening when I came out. I kid.
It was two and a half hours. It was a bit long. Yeah.
I enjoyed the last Jedi greatly, but you have a limited amount of time and treasure that you can spend in a 2 to 2.5 hour film. Whereas with the extended universe, with the comics, it plays into what you were just saying in terms of like in a comic book like this the Last Era, which we're talking about. Last Era, Heir to the Throne, Heir to the Empire that we were just talking about. You can take things in so many different directions, and I think that's what this comic book did. And in not just in the comics, but in the books or the role playing games, as you referenced as well. All of these different things, you can have a field day. You know, it reminds me of the Thieves' World. Do you remember Thieves' World?
Yes, I do.
The series of books that was basically set in one world, and then they let the writers kind of go crazy.
Yeah, to play in that world, basically.
To play in that world. It's world building. It's El Generic world building. And I thought this comic was a great example of world building. Because you had, like, Talon Card, right? The smuggler, the Han Solo stand-in in some ways, even though Han Solo was an active part of this.
Well, Han Solo's respectable now, so you need to have that. And Lando is also in this, and he's respectable to a certain extent as well.
Ish. Lando should never be completely respectable.
Well, there's one. Okay, so, you know, the Empire at one point, or Thrawn's forces at one point, attack Lando. And there's a scene right afterwards where he says, I lost 53 of my workforce. Oh, and then they go on and have dinner. It's like 53 people are killed and they just sort of blow it off as my workforce.
Well, you know, I'll keep my Marxism to myself.
No, I agree with you. There's great world building here. And people were very upset. I was not one of them when the old extended universe was moved into Legends in order to free up plot ideas so that the movies can go on without the baggage of the extended universe. Right. Now, I personally think that's a smart idea, but you can see that a lot of characters and ideas that were built in there, they haven't gone away. They're being incorporated into the new canon. Thrawn, of course, being one of them. He has appeared in Rebels, in the Rebels TV series, and there is a new novel by Timothy Zahn, sort of taking this idea, this Thrawn trilogy, and pulling it into the new canon.
And Thrawn is getting his own there's going to be a limited series under the Star Wars banner from Marvel that will be canon. Thrawn is getting his own, I think it's a 5 or 6 issue limited series.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that.
So he is, he is being accepted into the current canon as opposed to the legend.
Right. He is firmly entrenched now in the current version of Star Wars. But yeah, I know what you mean by being a little confused by the plot lines because...
Well, it felt like there was a lot of, they were flying one place and then suddenly for... no reason they had to turn around and fly to it. There was a lot of, I felt like I was reading The Lord of the Rings where there was a lot of walking and talking, or in this case, flying and landing and then flying again and then landing.
There was what seemed like a little bit of fan service where they had to visit Kashyyyk to see the Wookiees.
The Wookiee part just really confused me.
I think they just
It's always good to see Wookiees. Let me clarify. Yeah. I'm always happy when Wookiees are involved, unless it's a TV special from the 70s.
And to be fair, now I have read the novel that this is based on, and they do go into a greater, or Timothy Zahn does go into a greater backstory on all this stuff. So the comic, while it does stick to the storyline very well. It's a very good adaptation. It did make some, you know, creative edits here and there.
Which you have to do.
Yeah, which has to be done.
Yeah.
So it can be read as kind of jumping between plot lines pretty quickly. That being said, I think it's, like I said, very, very well done.
And it is hard for me, again, where I only read the first third of the trilogy. So there are things that I don't know going forward that get resolved later on in the trilogy. We're just talking about the first 6 issues.
But it does tell a nice little story arc. It does what it needs to do. It introduces you to the characters. It gives you it builds the world that they're in very well. And then it sets up the story going forward.
Right.
It ends with a cliffhanger of Admiral Akbar being
accused of treason.
I believe. Yeah, I believe it was a trap myself.
Akbar. Yeah.
Again, much like the Goonies comment I said earlier, I'm going to say something very controversial. I'm not a big fan of Admiral Akbar. I mean, he's fine. He looks cool, but
oh, Paul.
I know.
Oh, Paul. He is a hero of the Battle of Endor.
I realize that.
A hero, Paul.
You know. Do you know what his species is called? They're calamari.
I know.
Okay. So I think Admiral Akbar would make a great appetizer. I say we deep fry him with little breadcrumbs, some cocktail sauce. Oh, no, even better.
Admiral Akbar is delicious.
Yes. We could put him in a tortilla. You could say, it's a wrap.
Oh.
Thank you, everybody. I'll be here all week.
as we attempt to, well, you know, Admiral Thrawn could also be a prawn.
Admiral Prawn. But it's an all seafood version of Star Wars. You can have Prawn Solo. I think we're losing it.
To try to pull us back, I am now adopting the serious voice. Speaking of Akbar, though, in all seriousness, though, I actually like the Akbar sort of side plot, which obviously will go forward into future issues. But the who is his rival? I guess was it Borsk Fela? Am I saying that right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fela.
Yeah, these are Star Wars names, and I'm sure there's someone out there who will let us know in quite strong language what we're saying.
But it's his, you know, rival in the New Republic. And one of the things I really liked about this comic was the sort of the infighting going on within the New Republic.
Yes, I agree. That whole idea that it just doesn't, you know, they won the war and everything's perfect now. They don't live happily ever after. They have to actually start a new government and people disagree.
But there's a lot of interesting political maneuverings. It doesn't get a lot of page time, but every time we have, and it's often mentioned in passing when they're off world, but I found that to be like really interesting is the sort of nascent political beginnings of the New Republic that I thought this comic did very well.
Yeah, I agree. There is... So the one thing that we have now, as far as current canon and what's happening in this story, especially, I mean, the extended universe in general, but is the portrayal of Luke. And the biggest difference between the current canon and the extended universe is that Luke is a superhero in this.
Right.
He can do no wrong. He's super powerful. Yeah, yeah. And
everywhere he goes, people are like, "Ooh, you're Luke Skywalker. How dreamy."
Exactly, exactly. And it continues
except
on
for Mara Jade.
And that's why he falls in love with her, man. Sam and Diane.
Yeah. A little ditty about Sam and Diane.
Yeah. I actually find that to be a bit tedious when I read these old stories. I like a character to be flawed and to make mistakes. And, you know, spoilers for Last Jedi, the way he is portrayed in that movie, I find much more interesting than the way he is portrayed in these novels or these comics.
But I get it to a point, too, because it's following George Lucas's original. You know, I remember reading, you know, George Lucas was pissed that people liked Han Solo better than Luke Skywalker because Luke Skywalker was supposed to be George Lucas's Avatar.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, so, you know, he wanted Luke Skywalker to be sort of the shining knight. Mm-hmm. You know, Luke Skywalker was Lancelot. And I think some of that carried on into the comics, even all these years later when we read this one, where Han Solo is still the wisecracking rebel, and Luke Skywalker is sort of the infallible, becoming...
No, he's the Superman avatar of the Star Wars universe, which I find, you know, it's interesting, and it does yield some interesting results as you read these stories. But ultimately, I'd much rather have a flawed hero. And that's why people loved Han Solo. That's why people get so upset when he made Han not shoot first.
Right.
He's a flawed hero. And that's what people gravitated to him and latched onto. And when you try to clean that up and sanitize it, it's boring.
But at least you didn't make Han Solo run around with like a cell phone or a flashlight as opposed to a blaster.
That's true. Huh?
Was that too referential?
I think that was.
I'm referring to E.T.
Oh, that's.
When Steven Spielberg edited out the guns and put in like flashlights or phones or whatever it was.
Yeah, walkie-talkies that he had.
Walkie-talkies, yeah. Phones. Yeah. I'm giving cell phones to a movie from 1981 to... Sorry.
Yes, exactly. Don't sanitize. It is what it is. Leave it there.
I would like to add like another quick, like I feel like maybe we should have led with this, but we should talk about the art on this as well.
Oh yeah.
Because I thought, you know, the human art was kind of kind of bland and generic, but the rest of the art, the ships, the outer space, the creatures, that is some fantastic art going on in this.
Yeah, and there's some really long landscape.
These are great panels. Like 2-page spreads.
Yeah.
That are beautiful. This is beautiful artwork.
I agree. The space battles and the landscapes and the architecture all looks great. And I also agree that the, you know, the faces and expressions are serviceable.
Right.
Yeah.
Clearly, artists were chosen for their ability for a different ability than humanoid. And that's fine because, my God, the ships alone and the outer space scenes alone are beautifully rendered. And by beautifully rendered, I don't mean like painted or, you know, we're not talking about, you know, Bill Sienkiewicz or whatever. We're talking about, you know, a grand space opera epic that has some incredible art to match. I mean, these are lush landscapes, desolate regions, just conveyed very well, I thought.
Yeah, and there are, like we said before, there's a lot of locations that they go to. So you have all the jungles of Kashyyyk, and then the desert landscapes, and again the space battles, like we said, are just look so good.
Yeah, this is a beautiful comic book to look at. Kudos to the artists. And I wasn't familiar with the artists. You mentioned their names, and I had them on the tip of my tongue, but I was not familiar with their work outside of this.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not very familiar with them either. But overall, I, like I said, the artwork is beautiful. The storyline itself sticks really close to the original novel, so it's a very good adaptation. And overall, I really enjoy this. I think it not only read this, but also read the entire trilogy, because it's a fascinating story arc with a fascinating character, and it's a look into a Star Wars universe that that isn't around anymore.
Right.
Any final thoughts, Brian?
I don't. Other than I would definitely recommend this comic. I'm actually looking forward to reading the next two trilogies, I guess we'll call them, in this particular story arc. So there's, I believe, 6 or 12 more issues to read that kind of wrap things up. So I'll be I'm intrigued enough and I'm engaged enough in this to continue to read it.
Yeah, it is. I honestly think it's a very good story. I love Thrawn. I think he's a phenomenal character, and I look forward to seeing. I would love to see him in the live action stuff. But
do you know if there's any? Well, you may or may not know. I was about to ask if they're going to introduce him into the films.
I don't think coming so. Up,
but you can't say for certain in case there's spoilers about his fate.
Well, I mean, yes, there are spoilers about his fate, but again, all that's been thrown out the window,
right?
So he could theoretically still be around, but if he's around during the Rebels time, which is before the first movie, before Rogue One, the chances of him still being around now would be
possible.
It would be a little bit beyond plausible. I was kind of hoping he'd be Snoke, but
oh, interesting.
Yeah, but you know, fan Snoke theories. You were hoping Snoke would be
cancel that.
Okay. Yeah.
My one final thought on the comic, other than saying that I recommend it and look forward to reading it, is I would also like to give a shout out to Wedge, who was actually in this comic.
Yeah, they fit him in there, you know, or
they
maybe
fit
they
him in there.
They kind of wedged him
more than the current series can do.
They wedged him in there. Hey, you know, I think he's still around. Isn't he still around in the comics?
I'm trying to think of like any reference to him in the current comics, and I feel like he's disappeared. Maybe it's time for Marvel to give us a Wedge series.
A Wedge Antilles 5-issue mini.
Written by Frank Miller.
Oh, jeez.
And illustrated by Mike Allred.
Okay. How about a Neil Gaiman Wedge Antilles?
Yeah. Be very mythological.
Oh, yeah. Has Neil Gaiman written any Star Wars?
Not that I know of.
Because he's written pretty much everything. Okay, so I think that wraps up this particular episode. We both really liked it. And this is an interesting look back on Star Wars that was. And it's really interesting to see some of the concepts that are making their way into the new continuity.
Yes.
So, Brian.
Paul.
What do you have in store for us on an all-new episode of the Collected Edition?
Well, I believe in 2 weeks we will be discussing a topic which I have danced around for a while, a character that I have danced around for a while. I've mentioned him many, many, many times, and we're probably due to discuss my pal Daredevil.
Oh! So,
yes, it's about time, right? So Daredevil is one of my favorite characters, in case regular listeners haven't figured that out. And so for our first, but maybe not our last foray into the world of Daredevil, I am recommending the Daredevil Born Again
arc,
which comprises of issues 227 to 233 of Daredevil. It is written by Frank Miller and illustrated by the genius David Mazzucchelli. And so that's my recommendation. We'll be doing the Born Again arc of Daredevil by Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli.
That's fantastic. I really look forward to reading that again and talking about it with you, because I think we'll get some. I'm looking forward to your insight on this particular storyline.
It's heavy stuff, man.
It is,
man.
Okay, that's it. As always, thank you everyone for listening. Please leave a comment. We always love feedback. And until next time, keep reading comics.
Be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at the Daddy Elk Productions handle @DaddyElk and use the hashtag #CollectedEdition. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I will be demanding remuneration.
We're making nothing, you get nothing. You actually have a share of the profits, Brian.
And so far, an equal share.
That's right.
You're doing most of the work, and yet I'm enjoying an equal share.
Well, you know, that's how it is. You are the star of the show. I'm just the conduit through which your greatness emerges.
Who is the star of the show? You know who the star of the show is, Paul?
The comics.
The comics.